Hello, friends. Welcome to Time in the Studio. This is a podcast with artists and herbalists, creatives and plant people talking about growth, healing, and connection. And I'm your host, Sarah Marie Miller. And I'm an artist and an herbalist, and I just wanted to have an excuse to call my friends more often and share our conversations with the world. And I'm also the owner of the company A to Zia Arts, offering pottery and plant medicine to the world. My specialty is in working with flower essences, nutrition, and herbalism, working with people one-on-one generally, but I'm about to launch a shop on my website. It's exciting and nervous. Makes me nervous. So that will be within about a month or so. So yeah, keep your eyes peeled for that. That's at aidazea.com, AIDAZEA.com. And I also wanted to announce that I have a little donation link on my website now for Time in the Studio. So if you would like to leave a donation for as little as a dollar or as much as $1 million, you can do that. It's at timeinthestudio.simplecast.fm, and then there's just a little dollar sign you can click on and leave any amount of money. I love doing this podcast, but it does take some time and resources, and I want it to be a sustainable endeavor and for me to just be able to keep doing it because it's really fun. So yeah, if you enjoy this podcast and want to help make it more manageable and doable, please feel free to leave a donation if that feels right for you. Another thing I want to let you know about is the review of the week. I just want to read that because that was really sweet. Somebody left a really lovely review. So this is coming from Dana Aline, and she says, "Sarah has such a wonderful knowledge and insight into plants, and I'm looking forward to hearing more." And I just want to say thank you so much, Dana. You are such a sweetheart, and I really appreciate that. Just really kind review. And it's interesting. It does make such a difference in how many people listen with each review. It really increases listenership. And I think right now there are listeners in over 12 countries around the world. Mostly in the United States, but also some listeners in the United Kingdom, Sweden, New Zealand, Japan, and the Netherlands. Those are some of our other top places that people are listening. So hello to you all over the world, wherever you're listening today. And I'm really excited for this episode. I'm chatting with my friend David David, and he is really cool. A life coach who focuses on nature connection and finding our answers through listening to the plants and rocks and just working with nature more to get more understanding of how to be in alignment with ourselves. So he has a lot of really great wisdom to offer on this episode, the 12th episode. And I do apologize. This is the first episode that I've done in person and outside, which was really fun, but the sound quality is a little bit challenging. So there's definitely some wind and a little helicopter flying above us throughout. So I just want to thank you for your patience through all of that. And yeah, just to let you know, there's some sound issues, but I did just invest in a new microphone. So that will be, I'm going to use it in the next couple episodes and see how that goes. So that's exciting. Yeah, I just want to thank you all for listening and for your sweet feedback. If you want to connect to Time in the Studio on Instagram, that's a great way to connect. You can DM me there. It's Time in the Studio, Time Like the Herb. I'm also on, I have my own personal Instagram, that's Sarah Marie Studio, and you can check that out. I started a project at the 100 days of the Shisandra sketches. So I'm taking 10 Shisandra berries each day and then doing a drawing in my sketchbook and sharing the drawings. And then I also have an Instagram for my business, AidaZiaArts, AIDA.ZEA.Arts, or you can check out the website, AidaZiaArts.com, AIDAZEA.com. So yeah, thank you so much again for being here, and let's dive into the interview. Thank you. Okay, so this week I'm so honored and excited to have David Raffalock on the show for Time in the Studio. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here.
It's so cool. So we're sitting under the pine trees in Colorado in this beautiful park, drinking tea, and it's the first recording that I've done in person. Yeah, so it's definitely like we'll have more elements, more sound elements that are more alive than oftentimes it's normally more muffled.
But I like the way you said that, more alive.
I really am inspired by your practice and just sense that you have such a deep, profound way of working with people. And the name of your business, Profound Purpose Coaching, I feel like there's such a power to that. Where did that name come from?
You know, that name sort of came to me out of nowhere. And I gave it a solid 2 weeks to really work. Like, is there another name? Why is this one in the forefront of my mind? And it was just that.
Wow.
From the moment it came, it was like, that's the name of my practice. I don't know where it came from. It just struck me.
So cool. Like lightning.
Yeah, like lightning. And the core of it is really that I work with people coming from all different backgrounds and goals and all that. But really at the core, I think, of my work is helping people to connect to their true purpose, connect to their deeper selves, and sort of reignite that flame of passion and meaning in their life. So Profound Purpose kind of made sense.
Yeah, that's big work.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's really amazing. And I feel like 2 weeks, like you say you waited for 2 weeks, but that really isn't that long in the scheme of things. Like, I know people who have been trying to create business names and they've been, you know, trying to mull it over for 6 months or more. So I think that's actually, sometimes it's like first thought, best thought. And that seems like a good instance of that.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was. It was just like this isn't getting out of my mind. So, okay, this is
it. That's cool.
Yeah.
And I can see just how you, through your life, the little bit that I know, I can just see how you are getting more in alignment with your life. And it seems like it's helping you through working with people. Can you talk a little bit about maybe your life path so far?
Yeah, totally. Just to start off, I think I embody sort of that wounded healer archetype, and I think the things that I have struggled with in my life and worked through is kind of what I'm able to offer guidance with.
Yeah.
So a little bit about my background. So, let's see. So at the age of like 3.5, I was more or less an only child. I have an older half sister who lived in Hawaii pretty much my whole life. So kind of an older sibling, kind of not.
Right.
I was more or less an only child in my household until I was about 3.5, and then my younger brother was born with Down syndrome. And that immediately shifted the attention from me to him because he needed a lot of attention. Literally people from the community coming into my house to help him with patterning. I don't know if they still do that, but that helps with sort of structural, musculoskeletal structure issues. So that happened. And then from a very early age, I struggled with this sense of not valuing my own needs, because there was clearly someone whose needs were more important in my mind. So I became a caregiver at a very young age.
God, that makes my eyes well up. Just, I can feel the truth of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't realize the impact that it had on me until I was in a sweat lodge in my early 20s and kind of had this release of, holy shit, I didn't realize, but my entire life I've been operating under the impression that my needs don't matter.
Wow.
So that was big work that came up when I was an adult. I became a caregiver at a young age and definitely learned compassion and patience through my experience with my brother. Those were the big ones, and those kind of carried me through my adolescence and young adulthood. Those are qualities that I've had, I think, because of the experience with my younger brother.
Yeah, I can see you radiating both of those qualities in a really profound way, and just, yeah, your ability to listen and be really present with a moment is just really potent. It's really inspiring to see just how you are with people in the world and just your amazing attitude. And yeah, there is just like this sense of compassion and like never any judgment. It's just like trying to dive in and see what's underneath and what people are really going through and how to help them work through stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
So it's cool that you've come to this path. I don't know very much about coaching. Like, what, can you talk about that a little bit? Like, how did you come to realize you wanted to be a coach? And I know you work with nature-based coaching, so I'd love to just know more about that whole realm.
Yeah. So sort of very briefly, I always wanted to work in the field of psychology. That's what brought me out to Boulder initially. I wanted to go into the wilderness therapy program, master's program at Naropa. So I was like, screw it, I'll do the undergrad there in contemplative psych. So that's what brought me out here originally. I didn't finish that program, but I always wanted to do something along those lines. And my first year in college, one of my roommates, who's now my best friend, he was in the program I'm in now. Now he's the director of the program.
Oh, cool. What is his name?
So his name is Ryan Holsapple.
Oh, and he does the podcast that you've mentioned.
Yeah, he does the podcast. It's called Soul Tree. And it's on Podbean.
It's on iTunes too. I've listened to it. It's great.
Yeah. So definitely recommend that podcast.
Yeah.
He's really capturing the essence of the work that we're doing here. So that was kind of how I knew about the program. The program, by the way, is called Earth-Based Institute. That's the school. And I'm in their program for nature-connected coaching. And they also have an additional certification for transformational wilderness guiding.
Oh, cool.
So I'll be doing that as well.
What is the difference between the nature guiding and the coaching?
Yeah, so the nature guiding is more... you know, how to work with people out in the wilderness for extended periods of time, focusing on really dropping in, using nature as a catalyst to really drop in, and you know, doing ceremony, holding space for what's coming up. Because, you know, when people are in a place where they feel safe, their nervous system releases what it's been holding on to. So it's really learning how to be there, how to guide ceremony, how to keep people alive and safe, physically as well as emotionally out in the wilderness. And then the coaching is sort of a hybrid between conventional coaching and nature connection. And the real core of this school is from a lineage called the Tracker School, and that's Tom Brown Jr. In New Jersey has a survival skills school where he teaches both physical survival skills and also spiritual skills.
I've heard his name before, Tom Brown.
Yeah, definitely recommend it for anyone who is interested in nature connection, spiritual skills, and also hands-on practical survival skills. Amazing. So amazing. Cool. There's a difference between walking out in the woods with your gear and connecting with nature in that way, camping or anything like that. There's a huge difference between that and going in the woods, building your own shelter, building your own tools, and really experiencing what it's like to accept the gifts that nature has to offer to keep you alive.
Wow. So that's so cool. Have you done that work with him, like going out into nature and being more self-reliant?
Yeah. So basically I've done three courses there, and they're week-long courses, and you go out in a spot in the Pine Barrens, and it's an intensive, and, you know, for, you know, 10 hours a day or whatever, you're learning either through lecture or practical experience. You're learning how to survive, how to track, and, you know, things like that. So
cool. Yeah. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. So the coaching is, you know, conventional coaching is really helpful for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It's really focused on, you know, goals, setting goals, meeting goals. The coach is really there to help you dive a little deeper into what is stopping you from meeting your goals, how to work through those sort of roadblocks, and really hold you accountable to meeting goals. And I know, you know, conventionally sometimes those goals are, I want to make X amount of money. Right. And a lot of coaches will be like, great, how do we do that? The Nature Connected coaching goes quite a bit deeper, and it really is using nature as not only a catalyst for really dropping in and grounding, but also it's informative to the coach. We use a 50-50 rule where 50% of the work is, you know, planned or engaged with the client, and 50% is allowing nature to do its work.
Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah. So the sort of structure is, you know, we start with, okay, what's the issue that is really on your mind? Mm-hmm. Understanding that, you know, this philosophy of all roads lead to home, whatever is on the surface of the client's mind is a rabbit hole down to their core. So starting with that issue, we sort of work with that. I do a lot of reflection and ask, you know, sort of penetrating questions that inspire deeper reflection. And from there we get to, okay, with this situation, what do you want? What do you want to change? And that starts to rewire the brain to carve a new pathway of a new way of being. And then we go even deeper. And this is where the Nature Connected coaching comes in. And that's where we really identify, what is this deeper need that's not being met, that needs to be met in order for you to make this shift? And it's not, you know, I need more acceptance from other people. It's not, I need to make more money. It's always something deeper, like, I need to love myself more. I need to honor my gifts. I need to be patient with myself. And from that place, I usually move into ceremony, where we, it's all client led. I just offer suggestions. And that's an opportunity to really strengthen that neural pathway that was just created. Have the client experience what it's like to have that need met. Experience what it's like to let go of something and move into something. And from that place, that's where we move forward. And that's sort of when you strike that core, that's how you sustain real change.
That's so cool. Yeah. That's amazing. And I can feel just, I can just sense how profound that could be for people. It's like in physics, a thing observed is a thing changed. And so just to even begin that conversation and ask those questions to rewire those pathways and to reconsider like looking at things in a new way. And then to bring like a sense of ceremony and sacredness. And yeah, just to have meaning infused in that new insight and to be seen, that just seems really amazing.
Yeah. And meaning really is the operative word there. It's when you enter ceremony from that place of, oh my God, this is what I need to change. The mind becomes a meaning-making machine. And you know, what normally could be blades of grass around us or this tree or this twig over here, all of a sudden becomes a reflection of the psyche. Mm-hmm. So the client can actually look at the outside world and make meaning. And oh my God, I'm not going with the flow. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I'm resisting. Whatever it is reflected on the outside world so they can see their psyche painted on the landscape.
Wow. That's so cool. As you were saying that, I was like, I just looked over and saw this little grindelia flower that's like bright yellow and so in bloom. And I was like, oh my God, the plants around us are like in a, having a party. So it's interesting to think of like, our mind as, or what we perceive as being a reflection of what's going on within us as well. So,
yeah, it's amazing. And just a quick story about my own meaning making in my own ceremony. During an intensive for school, we went on a medicine walk, which for those who are not familiar, is really, you know, same idea. You set an intention and you just wander the land with no real destination. But you enter that meaning-making mode and you interact with the landscape and with your psyche and you can have some really profound revelations in that. So I did one and my intention, you know, was to gain some clarity on what I need to really step forward into my vision. Mm-hmm. And I remember I got to this ledge and I felt a lot of discomfort in my body and I looked back and I was like, okay, I don't have to go off this ledge. Mm-hmm. I can go back to what's comfortable. And then I realized, whoa, that's what I've been doing my entire adult life is I've been resorting back to what's comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I haven't taken that leap into really trusting that what's beyond that ledge is where I really need to be. So that, you know, became sort of a threshold where I literally took the leap. I didn't jump off. It was about 15 feet and pretty steep, but there were trees to help me down. So I kind of climbed down. It was a little uncomfortable. And that just really signified like, oh my God, I need to just do this. I need to, you know, go away from what's comfortable. I need to take a leap into this newness and trust that it's where I need to be. So sort of an example of, you know, how powerful that can be.
Yeah, that's amazing. What does that look like for you? Like what physical changes or things did you realize you needed to shift in order for that to be more in alignment?
Yeah.
Going over that ledge.
So the main thing was fear. I noticed that I had a tremendous amount of fear involving security and safety and vulnerability and mostly financial. That's a lot of what has held me back is sticking with what's comfortable because I'm afraid I get into survival mode.
Yeah.
So that was really profound in that I realized in doing that, that I can acknowledge that there are fears in my body. I felt it. Mm-hmm. And notice what it's like to move past that and really embrace the unknown, that sense of not knowing.
Yeah, it's a scary thing to do.
It's terrifying. Totally terrifying.
But I can see how you're doing that with your business, just really stepping into that and like claiming that space and just really showing up for your clients and just shifting that whole experience. What has that been like starting your own business?
It's been so interesting. I don't even know. It really has felt like I committed to taking the leap. And I am so grateful for the program that I'm in, because not only are they teaching me the practical skills, the practical tools, the spiritual skills and those tools to work with clients, but they're drilling in the business development to make sure that I am moving towards making a living for myself, helping people, because that's been a dream of mine since I was younger.
Yeah. And you're so naturally gifted at that too.
Thanks. Yeah, it feels great. Really for me, it's been following the business development slow and steady, really focusing in the beginning on honing the vision. Mm-hmm. What is the work that I want to do? What are the services that I want to offer? Who's my ideal client for each of those services? And then thinking even deeper, what am I actually offering those clients? What am I providing for them? And after getting all that hashed out, I became really clear, like, this is the work. And then the next step is, how do I get myself out there? How do I, work on the practical things, the paperwork, the logo, the website?
How do you do all of that? Because your website looks awesome. I love your logo. And your intake form is so beautiful and just really gave this moment of reflection for me when you sent it to me for me to look through it. And I was just like, wow, this is a really amazing experience to go through, just like answering the questions on your intake form of like, okay, what are my goals, and kind of diving into that deeper. But your language around that is really beautiful and just feels really authentic. So how do you do that? Like, how do you get all the details kind of pulled together? Are you working with other people to help you, or are you just kind of like, I want to know, how do you do it?
I mean, most of it was really taking the time to quiet myself and really check in with, what do I need to know from my clients? What kind of primer inquiry do I want my clients to go through? And like you said, it was kind of the reflection was really helpful. And that's kind of, I even say it on my disclosure form, like that. That questionnaire is not only good for me to understand what I'm getting myself into with a client, get some ideas of how to support them, but really for the client to understand, okay, this is the reflection, the self-reflection and awareness that I need to do this work. This is a primer. And it's funny because I have a question towards the end that is on a scale from 1 to 10. How overwhelmed are you by this question?
I love that one. That one was so funny because I was like, it's like a long questionnaire and it requires a lot of reflection and tuning into yourself and asking a lot of personal questions. And I could just see there's such a potency in writing those answers down. Mm-hmm. And then I saw also at the end, like, you email all the responses to people. And so I feel like that's a really cool idea, just for them to have that kind of time capsule of like, oh, this is where I was at before I started working with you. Yeah. And then they can look back, you know, months later, years later, and be like, whoa, so much has shifted. Mm-hmm. And so many of those goals maybe become a reality.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's a wonderful time capsule, like you said, to look back on. And yeah, it's funny because that question about the how overwhelmed are you is really, it really gives me a lot of insight into where people are at with, like, how willing are they to self-reflect, how in tune with themselves they are, what their level of trauma is, and how big their window of tolerance is with their trauma. Because if they're like, that was really overwhelming, then I know they were honest and they got deep and that was a lot for them. So I know moving forward that I have to, you know, really be aware of their window of tolerance with their trauma. Because some clients it's too much and they'll check out. So really working with that.
Yeah. That's so interesting because when I saw that question, I just like immediately, I think I bounced out of that question and just like immediately thought of it as a joke. You know, like it was hard for me to be like, really, no, how hard was this to answer these questions? Mm-hmm. So it's a really good way of reflecting on, what is going on with the person.
What's there? And also how willing were they to really dive in to that questionnaire? Sometimes if it's really overwhelming, that's a good sign. That's like, okay, you really did some self-reflection that you're not used to.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
Yeah, it's a fun questionnaire.
Yeah, it's really well done.
Thank you.
In mentioning trauma, it's a profound thing, I think, for everyone in the world. Like, you don't have to be a vet to have trauma. You know, it's like everyone experiences trauma in large and small ways every day. So I think it's really beautiful to honor that and to consider that. How do you kind of work with people who are kind of immersed in that trauma realm?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, I don't think coaches generally have training with trauma. I'm most certainly not a trauma therapist.
Right.
I don't consider myself a therapist in any sense of that word. I do differentiate coaching from guiding. And I do some guiding work, and that's when I really step in with trauma. And it really depends on whether the trauma is one event, whether it's sort of compounded, complex trauma, which can be anything from, you know, a emotionally abusive parent to not fitting into a gender role, to things like that. And it also depends on the client's nervous system response, whether they get hypoactivated or hyperactivated. And really, I won't force working with that trauma, because that's something a therapist would probably do. But if it comes up, I know how to work with it. And for a lot of people, that is just offering resources. And in the trauma world, you know, a resource is something that can help get you out of that trauma loop. And like I said, it depends on your response, but that could be going into the body and, you know, doing some exercises to feel different parts of the body, maybe doing exercises to really enliven the senses and get that sense of presence. For some people, that triggers dissociation. So then it's more the external world. How to, you know, what do you see over there? What are you hearing? For some people, it's bringing in a memory or a person who makes them feel relaxed, calm, present, connected to themselves, things like that. So, working with trauma for me looks like really offering those resources, helping people to work with those resources. And if they're willing to sort of nudge that window of tolerance, to try to make it so next time they can handle a little bit more of whatever's making them go into that trauma response. Mm-hmm. So they have the tools to really rework the nervous system to be able to handle a little bit more every single time.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I can sense how that's kind of like a ceremonial experience too, just like returning to that and helping people expand what's possible for themselves.
Yeah. And also giving permission to dissociate, giving mm-hmm. permission for their nervous system to act the way that it does. Mm-hmm. Because at one point in their life, they had to do that in order to survive. Mm-hmm. Their nervous system learned that trauma response in order to survive. And I find that honoring that and giving permission for their nervous system to do that is profound. Mm-hmm. And really thanking, like, oh my God, this helped me through that traumatic experience. This helped me to cope with, a narcissistic parent or mm-hmm. whatever it is. And then the work becomes, how do I understand that that was amazing? I appreciate that. And that response no longer serves me in where I'm going.
Wow. That's amazing to be there for someone and to bear witness to that. And to have that compassionate understanding and just thanking that part of oneself. That's like, this is there to protect you. Like that was there for a purpose and honoring it and allowing it to go when it's ready to go. So that's such a cool, amazing just process.
It's really satisfying work when you can create a safe enough place for someone to really unearth some of the things that are holding them back, that are that some ways that their brain is wired, stuff like that.
That's so cool. Really amazing work. So on our walk up here, you mentioned you had an experience with a coyote on this land. Would you be willing to talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah. So that was another medicine walk. And by the way, this land, this is Shanahan Ridge in Boulder. It's open space, a lot of open space right up against the foothills. This is where I take most of my clients, at least for the initial intake session, which is a few hours long. And this land is really healing for me and for a lot of people I take here. So I was doing a medicine walk, really with the purpose of connecting to myself, connecting to my vision. And I was on it, and I was, it's probably 20 minutes in, and I all of a sudden energetically felt like I was about to cross a threshold. I felt this barrier, and it didn't feel like I couldn't move past it, but I felt it strong, and I kind of just took a minute to ground myself, kind of notice what it was like to be on the edge of that boundary there. And I took a very intentional step into it. And at the time, there was this tree stump surrounded by a circle of grass. And I was like, oh, there's something about that spot. I need to really go into that with intention and clarity. And that wasn't it. The moment I took that step and my foot hit the ground, this coyote stood up from maybe 15, 20 feet away and just stared at me. And we just made eye contact for over a minute.
That's wild.
It was amazing. It was my first time seeing a coyote. I've only heard them. Mm-hmm. So that was amazing. And then it started walking, but kind of trotting, but at a slow pace, wasn't running by any means. And then it would stop, and it would look back at me and make eye contact for 15, 20 seconds. And I just followed it for literally about 10 minutes. It guided me. It was leading me somewhere. It wasn't running away. And the point at which it finally disappeared from my vision, when I walked up to that spot, that was the exact spot where I came here with my friend Ryan a few years back. And just really, I remember in that moment with him, I was really connected to myself, really connected to the land. We were having a really deep conversation. We had harvested some mullein stalks and cottonwood to make hand drills for making fire. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was just remarkable that that led me to that spot that made me realize I have the experiences I need to reference to keep myself aligned with the forward movement that I'm, you know, still going through.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not about finding something. Mm-hmm. It's really about accessing that part of myself that is present when I'm really in line with my vision and my purpose and my work in the world.
Wow. Cool. That's amazing. What an incredible encounter and deep messages to receive.
Yeah.
They continue to unfold, it sounds like. It's like an ongoing kind of dialogue with yourself and with this land and with that animal as well.
Yeah.
Within you.
Yeah, it was a really incredible connection to see an animal, make eye contact, and just both beings just being there in contact. Mm-hmm. And I've had that with, most recently with a large moose.
Oh, cool.
And on my vision quest, it was with a bear. So yeah, it's remarkable to have that connection.
Yeah, and it's so interesting that you sensed it, like that you were at a threshold and it was the same place you had experienced that same threshold before, and just feeling a boundary of like crossing over into something different, and then the coyote stood up. Like, that's a really, it's so interesting just to feel that energy.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing, is when you enter that ceremonial space and can really tune into the environment, you can tune into those subtleties. Your body knows.
Mm-hmm.
Your body knows where the land is pulling you. Your body knows the boundary of other beings.
Mm-hmm.
You can sense those things.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, which I'm sure you have experienced.
Yeah, I went on a walk with a friend a couple weeks ago, and we were walking and I saw a rattlesnake.
you told me about that.
Just like, there's a rattlesnake right there. And so we just like, she's like, that's totally cool. Just go to the left. And so we just like, you know, made a really big arc around and veered away from it. But it was at this time that she had come to visit, and it was just bringing up some change for me, and she was going through a lot of different changes, and so it was interesting just to encounter that snake energy at that point of some change.
Yeah, that's powerful energy. Especially a rattlesnake.
Yeah.
Those things don't fuck around.
No. Yeah, they mean business.
Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting, too, how the body knows.
Oh yeah. Like I was like, whoa, we were walking and all of a sudden I was like, I'm not going any further. And then I just scanned and I was like, oh, that's why.
That's the reason. Yeah. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is like a really big loop this way.
Yeah.
But yeah. It was exciting though, just to like be near that energy. And I felt like it was a messenger. It was like it was a messenger carrying other things with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
what else is coming up for you? Oh, I wanted to ask you about the idea of coaching not being telling people what to do.
Oh, yeah.
Because yeah. One time you were telling me about coaching, and I was like, it's just, you tell people what to do. And
you're
like, no.
I bet so many people would be like, yeah, I need someone to tell me how to live my life. I'm like, yeah. That's not my job.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is your job? If coaching isn't telling people what to do, like, how do you help people get into the alignment?
It's most certainly not telling people what to do, because first of all, that's not safe.
Right.
That's not a safe place if you go to someone with a real issue and they tell you something that doesn't work for them. Mm-hmm. Or that won't work for you. That's the main reason, is like, just because this works for one person does not mean it doesn't work for me. That's going to work for me. Right. And you telling me that it's going to work for me is you not actually seeing mm-hmm. what's happening with me.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is, in the coach-client relationship, we are working to understand you mm-hmm. and your brain and your problems, and, just reflective listening and penetrating questions is a surefire way to go deep, because reflective listening and asking questions that are relevant to what the person just said offers that safe container of, oh my God, I'm being seen right now. So like, someone is present with me, not just, you know, oh, you have this issue, here's a solution.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually listening to me, and that reflection, like, if we're having a conversation and you're just telling me what you hear, oftentimes that is enough for my brain to make the connection of, oh, that's what I said.
Yeah.
And that brings you a step deeper, and every time you go a step deeper and deeper and deeper. It's not telling people what to do. It's challenging people. It's finding someone's edge and nudging it and offering, you know, here's a question. If you're ready to answer it, you're ready to answer it. If you're not, you're not. We'll find something else. We'll find where that edge is, and that's where we're going to work. And the only thing I really offer, but I offer tools to connect to yourself, tools to connect to the natural world, resources to, like we mentioned, work with your trauma response, and then, you know, also, you know, more superficial tools of, like, you know, more of the life coaching stuff. Parts of your life and rate them and see where you're at and see, you know, where you want to go. So it's really the only thing I really offer is that reflective listening, the questions, and the tools and resources. So I'm not telling anyone what to do. I'm offering suggestions and seeing how it lands. I can always tell, you know, say we're looking to move into a ceremony. Suggestions, and I won't say, I think we should do this medicine walk, I think we should do this, you know, releasing ceremony, because if it's not right, it's not right, and then you break that contact with that person, you break that level of trust and safety when you start to impose what you think is best.
Yeah, and just that reflective listening is... And being willing to ask the hard questions, that is so powerful.
Yeah.
I think just being heard is, like, you know, they say it's one of the deepest forms of love, to truly be heard. And I don't know, I heard somewhere there's a therapy where you record the session and then you have to listen to yourself. And so in doing the podcast, yeah. I have to listen to myself, and it is painful. It's like, oh, my God, that's yeah. what I say? So it's real, but it is therapeutic. It does help me, like, get traction because there is a potency to being heard and to hearing yourself, and to have that reflection back is really amazing. And yeah. for you to be someone who can compassionately ask the tough questions and be there to be like, what about cha-cha-cha?
Yeah, see the holes in what's going on, and like, let's fill that gap there. What's happening there?
Yeah. What's an example of a challenging question that you have asked someone?
Well, to be honest, most of the time, it's very simple, mm-hmm. very, very simple questions. You know, I think in the beginning when I'm sort of getting a feel for what the issue is and what someone wants to change, it's really more context specific, and I'm not hearing, you know, anything really come to mind now, mm-hmm. But some of the most profound questions are, what do you need to change that? Mm. How do you need to treat yourself in order to make that shift? Mm. And also another hugely profound question is, you know, I can read more or less when someone has struck a chord mm-hmm. in themselves, when something landed, a new neuropathway in the brain was created. There's a lot of sensation and emotion in the body. Mm-hmm. And the most profound question in that moment is, what's happening in your body? Mm. What sensations are you feeling? Mm-hmm. And just offering, stay with it. Stay there. Don't run away from it. Mm-hmm. And that retrains the body from, oh my God, this is uncomfortable, I'm going to leave, to, okay, what am I feeling? Mm-hmm. What's there? And that is always, there's something at the bottom of that.
Right.
There's something there. And that's when it's like, oh my God, I need to love myself. Mm-hmm. And that moment is huge. Mm-hmm. So it really is the simple questions of like, what do you need? What's happening in your body right now?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool. It makes me think of it seems like you take really good care of yourself, and you need to do this deep work for yeah. other people, and to
yeah.
kind of continually have these resources and these tools for people. So I'm curious how you take care of yourself as a wounded healer and as a compassionate person who also needs to recognize your own needs.
Yeah. That's honestly huge for the work that I do. Self-care. So it's so important. I practice a lot of different ways of self-care. To start, I do have an autoimmune disease, which you know about. And that really affects my energy levels and my brain function, and things like that. So first and foremost, taking care of that. And what that looks like for me is, trying to take care of my adrenal glands, eating in a way that's really supportive for me, making sure I get enough sleep, exercising. So, you know, my daily sort of self-care right now is a mixture of all of those things. Mm. I make sure I get enough sleep for myself. I'm currently, as you know, on a ketogenic diet.
Yeah. I'd love to hear a little bit about your journey with food, because I know it's been quite a journey.
Yeah.
Of like trying a lot of different things. And yeah, I'm just curious where you're at now. What you've tried in the past,
what
that path has been like.
I've tried a whole bunch. I initially really got into it when I interned with a naturopath in mm-hmm. Boulder. who had two nutritionists on staff, and a nutrition protocol was a huge aspect of his treatment plan.
That's great.
Yeah. So I learned more about balancing blood sugar, how to really eat to keep your blood sugar balanced. So I did mostly paleo. If I did do grains and legumes and stuff like that, it would, you know, not just be a bowl of rice and beans. It would be accompanied by some fibrous, crunchy vegetables, some leafy greens, some meat, some healthy fats, and really learned how to, like, balance my meals in that way. Mm. I also did some testing, some blood testing, to find out my IgG, IgA antibodies, so what foods were actually triggering an immune system response, mm-hmm. which is really important for treating an autoimmune disease.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of, you know, that was when I really started to get into paying attention to what I'm eating. And then it sort of evolved over time into a ketogenic diet, which my uncle, who is a very successful chiropractor, 5 board certifications, does formulations for Barlean's.
Oh, cool.
But he was the one who initially didn't introduce me to ketogenic diet. I knew about it, but he was the one who was like, this works. Mm-hmm. This is really helpful.
Yeah.
So I've been doing that on and off for 2 years.
Oh, cool.
Probably. And that's sort of where I'm at now. I've kind of taken it to the next level.
Were you doing dairy-free keto? Is that right?
Yeah, dairy-free keto. So yeah, no butter even. I noticed after a date with someone where we indulged in some really amazing cheese and sherry.
Awesome!
It was incredible. It was amazing, and I loved it until like 3/4 of the way through. I was like, "Oh my god, I'm in pain."
Oh.
So that's when I realized I needed to go dairy free, and I felt better. My acne's cleared up. I have more energy. But so now I'm doing the one meal a day diet, which I just started trying that out. So
I haven't heard about that. What is that?
It's a form of intermittent fasting, where, you eat one meal a day. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a window of about an hour of eating and, 23 hours of fasting. And, I don't think that I could do it if I wasn't in a ketogenic state.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Because sort of bouncing that blood sugar is a little too much for my body. I know some people do it just fine. Some people do it on a vegan diet, which is, you know, very carb heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So in a ketogenic state, it works great. Drinking water solves my hunger. If I'm really feeling hungry, I'll add some electrolytes. Some trace minerals, drink sort of like a keto Gatorade, something like
cool.
that. But my hunger's manageable.
Wow.
My energy level, my brain function is better.
Yeah.
And I'm busy. It's really nice to not have to worry about my meals.
Amazing.
Yep. I just have an hour where I'm focusing on cooking for myself, enjoying a big meal, cleaning, and that's it.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I want to try that. I feel like I'm close to that some days, but I'm not like completely there. What does a day of food look like in that style?
Yeah, so for me, I eat around 2 o'clock p.m. It's funny, a.m. is feasible because of working as a server.
Yeah.
But it's
that's true. It's,
you know,
I hear
it's about my bedtime sometimes. Ooh. But yeah, I eat around 2 p.m., and it's just a large meal, about 3,000 calories. You know, for my activity level and my, you know, my size, I need about 3,200 calories a day to maintain my current weight.
Mm-hmm.
So I eat around that.
Do you just, like, pour coconut oil on your food or olive oil? Because that's what I generally do.
Yeah.
To get more good fats, but
yeah.
I was curious, is that
yeah.
kind of your mode
I do
of getting
avocado.
Fat?
Yeah. I do coconut oil, avocado oil, and then, you know, I make sure I'm getting, you know, enough protein.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll kind of you know, look and be like, okay, this is 60 grams of protein or whatever it might be, depending on my activity level. I haven't gotten super into calculating calories.
Yeah,
I've never gotten that into it.
Yeah, I feel like as long as you feel good, I don't want to count things.
Exactly.
I just can't be bothered.
I just make sure I have some sort of crunchy vegetable, broccoli, cauliflower, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, something like that. That's not, you know, too carb heavy, so I can stay in ketosis. A bunch of leafy greens, which I've been going to the farmer's market for.
Oh, nice.
They taste so much better than the Costco beans I bought.
Yeah. It's such a difference.
It's a huge
fresh
difference.
Vegetables are much better.
Yeah, it's a world. Difference. So, you know, that's pretty much it. I just make a big bowl of food.
that's awesome.
Huge bowl of food. I'm like, you know, make sure that the fat brings it up to the calories I need to eat.
Yeah.
There you have it. And then I just drink water for the rest of the day, you know, the rest of the night. For, you know, like I haven't eaten yet today. It's, I don't know, it's
2:13.
yeah. So, you know, I feel totally fine.
Yeah.
It feels good.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
and so
then
amazing.
I'll exercise in a fasted state. You know, I'll usually wake up and do a brief calisthenics workout, and then towards the end of my fasting window, I'll go on a little run.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I'm taking care of my body right now.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
that's great, and you're looking healthy and radiant, and
thanks. Yeah, it works
like
for me.
Feeling better. Yeah,
doesn't necessarily work for everyone.
Right,
everyone's different with nutrition and exercise, but this is what's working really well for me right now.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm learning too as a nutritionist. Is everyone is different, and kind of playing around with that reflective listening of just like asking people what they're eating and how they're feeling, and people usually know what's up for them. I feel terrible after I eat toast. I'm like, oh, what does that look like for you? And would you ever consider not eating
toast?
No. Okay.
Cool. Right. We'll check back.
Maybe
on that
we
one.
Can revisit that later. But yeah, it's interesting just to bear witness to people and not impose my ideas on other people. It's not always easy.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes just offering some science, like, you know, this may not be the case for you, but some people have antibodies to gluten, and that's why they get a response, and people can't digest it, and that's why they get a response or anything like that. And just so they can be like, oh, okay, that's a thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's for me, maybe it's not, you know. But I feel like sometimes, you know, with nutrition stuff, you know, offering like, you know, this is a thing for some people, maybe not for you. And then that kind of plants the seed of inquiry of, do I respond in this way to this food? And then if I do, is that food so important to me that I'm not going to give it up? Is my health more important? You know, what's that balance? How much is this affecting me? You know?
Right. Yeah. And I think it's interesting because food is so emotional. And the other day I was talking to Tommy about this. I was like, why is food so emotional? Like if I see food that isn't gluten-free, I'll like, it hurts my heart. I'm like, I want to eat that, and I can't. Like, it's, and I'm like, why do I have such an emotional reaction to that? And she's like, well, it is a matter of life and death. Food is a matter of life and death.
Yeah.
Like, so.
Totally. Keeps us alive.
That helped me just like have a little reflection of like, oh, yeah, it is like in our cellular, our bodies need food. And so it goes to that, like, core part of self, I think.
Yeah. And I know for me too, you know, knowing that food is, you know, energy and sustains life, I also notice that some of the times when I'm like, I just want that chocolate tort, or like,
yeah,
I just want that cake or that whipped cream, like, screw it. I'm now able to be like, okay, and no one's going to want to be around you because you're going to be smelling your face. Or like, Your brain's not going to function for a few days, or you're going to get acne or whatever. But the other side is like, okay, what's happening in myself that makes me crave something that I know isn't good for me?
Mm.
What mechanism is coming up? What neuropathway? Like, yeah. Oh yeah, when I used to feel an uncomfortable sensation in my body, a tough emotion, that's when I would be like, screw it. I'm going to eat until I'm in a coma because that's a way to escape.
Yeah, that is, from a family of emotional eaters, I can feel that one deeply.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That is a really big one.
That's part of the reason why I've kept, stuck in eating poorly for a while and still fall back into it every once in a while.
Yeah, it's hard. I think just to let yourself ride the waves and, like, I just try to view food as an experiment of, like, okay, I'm going to try this thing and see what happens. And then you learn from that, ideally.
Yeah.
Move forward.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, no guilt. I try to, like, release the guilt.
Yeah, no. Guilt is not helpful.
Yeah, it doesn't really do good things. Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm curious about some of your heroes. Who are you looking to right now to learn all of this about nutrition and coaching and connecting with the earth? And or who would you want to walk in the woods with?
the first person that comes to mind is Tom Brown Jr., who I mentioned, the dude who runs the Tracker School. That's where Earth-Based Institute stems from. That's where John Young's Wilderness Awareness School stems from. And that's sort of the founder of a lot of this deep nature connection, survival skills stuff comes from. And, I think I mentioned I've taken 3 courses at his school. He's a very standoffish person. He's very intimidating. I think he sets up an energetic boundary because he has so many people that come through his school. And I think he just understands that, I need to set up some sort of a boundary so I don't take all of this on. But I, as much as I think I would be intimidated, I would love to take a walk in the woods with that dude. I mean, that guy can go out and survive anywhere, in any season, under any condition.
Wow. That's amazing.
And part of it is the physical skills, part of it is the spiritual skills of, where am I being pulled towards? Where do I find the food that I need to survive? What do I need to stay away from? There's danger 2 miles that way. I'm going to go a different way. Stuff like that. So definitely look up to him. Two of my biggest heroes right now are Ryan Holzapfel, my best friend, who really guided me onto this path. He was now the director of the Nature Connected Coaching Program at the Earth-Based Institute, and also the owner of the Earth-Based Institute, Michael Jospy. Both of those guys are incredibly connected to the natural world. Unbelievably so. And for instance, during an intensive, my class was out at our sit spots up at the Star House, and our assignment for that sort of exercise was to be aware of what's happening in the natural world, sight, sound, scent, stuff like that, while being aware of our bodies and noticing what happens in our bodies before we start to calculate what it is. What's the sensation going on? And this plane flew by, and I got this really uncomfortable feeling in my body. Before it was like, oh, it's a plane, it's a man-made thing, it's in the natural world, it doesn't feel right, whatever. I just got that really uncomfortable sense, and we got together, and everyone in the class had the same thing.
Interesting.
When that plane flew over, and Ryan, who was not up there at the time, Michael was leading the class that day. Ryan, that moment that the plane flew over, texted Michael and was like, "Hey, I feel that something's off. Is everything okay up there?"
Wow, that gives me chills. That's cool.
So that level of connection is just so admirable. And the x-ray vision that those guys have into a person's soul and into a person's psyche. It's just so admirable. So, yeah, those are my everyday heroes.
That's amazing. It's cool that one of them is your best friend. That's,
yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that guy a lot.
It sounds like you learn a lot from those people as well.
Yeah.
What do you learn from yourself? Like, if you could give yourself advice 5 years ago, or if you could give advice to listeners, what would you say?
Yeah. I would say that, there's no guru. Mm-hmm. A guru, if you want one, is only a reflection of yourself, that mm-hmm. you are your own teacher. Mm-hmm. You have all of the wisdom that you need. Mm-hmm. You know, looking back at myself, you know, 5 years ago, I would just say that, you know what's best, and it's so valuable and important to listen to that deeper voice within yourself.
Yeah.
And go beyond your comfort zone. I think a lot of my decisions that I made when I was younger was based off of practicality, you know, financial survival, things like that. And that's really important. And I think striking a balance between, okay, how do I survive in the world so that I can give my gifts to the world? How do I honor my gifts? Mm-hmm. How do I really listen to myself and really understand what I'm meant to offer the world. Mm-hmm. Because I think the world needs people who can get in touch with their own gifts, get in touch with their purpose, and live in that way.
Mm. So cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Is there anything else coming through for you that you feel like you really need to talk about?
I kind of want to offer for listeners, just some practical tools for connecting to nature.
Awesome. Oh, that would be perfect.
Yeah.
Bring it on. That's great.
Yeah. So I, one very simple, if anyone has never heard of the idea of a sit spot, that's a place where you go, as much as possible. Ideally every day, 3 times a week is fine, where you just sit in the same spot out in nature somewhere. Mm-hmm. It can be in your backyard if you really can't get to a spot in nature. It can be where we're sitting right now, by a creek, anything, and just being there. Mm-hmm. Just being there with the landscape. It's just profound how you can watch how alive that spot is, how alive it is, how it changes through the seasons, how the animals and the birds start to recognize you as a non-threat and start to actually do their normal thing around you. At mm-hmm. first, they don't trust you and they retreat. But after not very long, all of a sudden you're watching birds do their thing, you're listening to bird language and understanding, oh, that's different. That sounded more like an alarm than just happy chirping. And then 2 minutes later, oh, here comes a person. You kind of understand how the network works. So there's the sit spot, super valuable. One of the main things that I think helps me connect to myself, my senses, the natural world, is an exercise that really engages the senses. And it's based off of this idea that, you know, in the modern world, we are in tunnel vision. We're always engaging in one thing, whether it's a screen, a book, a task. Our vision literally focuses on one thing, and so does the rest of our senses. And we all get tuned into that one thing. That's why when you're in a conversation and there's music going, you can either go listen to the music or the person. Most of the time you can either listen to the birds chirping or the conversation or the grass. But a way to open up those senses and really connect with the land is a technique called wide-angle vision. And that's when you open up that tunnel vision to where you're taking in the landscape. Doing it right now. You don't have to do anything different physically. And if you can, you can stick out your hands and wiggle your fingers. And without, you know, only focusing on your peripheries, but still gazing ahead, if you can see your fingers wiggling, that's sort of an idea. You take in the entire landscape. You don't have to, doesn't have to be clear vision for everything. But, you know, I can look at you and I can see that helicopter. I can see all the blades of grass dancing. I can see the bird that just flew over there. And with that follows all the other senses. I'm hearing more. I'm hearing the grass. I'm hearing the wind. And I'm feeling more. I can feel my butt on the ground. I can feel where my skin is contacting the wind, my clothing. And practicing that, of just really engaging the senses. It's a practice. It's a skill that you need to work towards. It's sort of like focusing during a meditation. You come out of it, drop back into it, and you sort of lengthen that time that you can stay in it. But that, it's said in this lineage, 5 minutes of that will drop you into alpha waves. It'll take you from beta to alpha. And, you know, the more you do it, the quicker that access is. And the easier access you have to theta and delta waves, which is incredibly important for productivity, for creativity, for presence, for, you know, calming your nervous system and all of that. So I would say those two things are so foundational.
I love that.
To really dropping in and letting your nervous system relax and really taking in what it is like to be here now in the present moment through all of your senses.
So cool. I know, I love having this conversation and just like looking at you and sensing the landscape around, like just being in this place and smelling and noticing. It's just, it is such a good reminder of, you can do this in nature, and then you can also do it in your regular life. You know, it's kind of like with yoga, like you practice on the mat so that when you're off the mat, you are in more alignment and have more mindfulness in that space too. So I think it's, I love that idea of sitting in nature, having that time of just like awareness, paying attention, so that when you have to be in a subway car or somewhere else that is not magical and with the pine trees, it helps you kind of drop into that state of relaxation and remember that connection is always there, even if you don't get to be in nature all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. And the natural world is really a catalyst for dropping in deep quickly. But once you establish that ability to stay in wide angle vision, to just enter it and get in touch with the rest of your senses, that transfers to everything. In a city, wherever, in a plane, whatever it is. And, you know, like you said, you just kind of build that resource. You don't need to do it in nature. I'd suggest trying, you know, starting.
Yeah, it's more fun.
In nature, it's more fun. it's more fun.
But it's not mandatory.
Yeah. No, it's a way of being. It's a mindfulness technique.
Cool. I love that tool. Thank you for sharing both of those exercises. So people are going to want to work with you because you're amazing. So how can we find you? How can we connect with you and stay up to date with all the amazing things that you're offering to the world?
Yeah. Thank you. I, you know, just my website. My website.
What is it called again?
It's called profoundpurposecoaching.com. Very simple, a little long, but it works.
Yeah.
Very simple website. It's sort of my first draft. You know, I've got a few pages, a little bit about me, a little bit about coaching.
It looks great.
Thanks.
Yeah,
thanks.
It's really well done.
And then, yeah, the last page is just a contact form where, you know, just fill out some basic contact information or just call me on my phone number on the website, which is, you know, Google Voice number for now.
Cool. Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah. I think just to have a little space is helpful.
Yeah. But yeah, just through my website, drop an email. I offer a free consultation.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. Which is, you know, essentially a chance for us to, get a feel for each other, see where you're at, see where you want to go and see if it's a right fit. And if, you think I can support you and if I think I can support you. You know, after that consultation, we'll send you my intake paperwork, which, you know, goes over the coaching relationship, the rates, and then the questionnaire, which is, like we talked about, the real beginning of the work.
Mm-hmm.
If you are here in Colorado, I really recommend the first session be about, you know, 2 to 3 hours, and that's where we can really drop in person, on the land, really go through a full process. I've noticed that is tremendously helpful for my clients to have that first session be like, oh my God, we went deep. This is the level that we're going to work on. Let's move forward from this place. If you're not in Boulder, I do Zoom sessions and I do phone sessions. Prefer Zoom so I can, you know, make eye contact through a screen, but still eye contact and know to pick up on some of your body language so I can, you know, read a little bit more into what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't have to follow the same structure. That can be, you know, hour and a half sessions.
Awesome.
So that's the best way to get in contact with me. Go to my website, profoundpurposecoaching.com. Call me, fill out a contact form, we'll get in touch and do a consultation and start to get to know each other.
Amazing. Well, David, thank you so much for making time today. I feel like this is such a incredible, sacred meeting just to be on this land and to hear more about your story and just, so inspiring to hear about how you work with people and how you connect with yourself and continue to evolve and help other people as well. So thank you so much for making this time.
Thank you. I'm so honored to be here talking about what I do because I, you know, I believe in it.
Yeah.
I think it's something some people can really, really use. And
definitely.
Yeah, it's been a really great conversation. I also, you know, really support you in what you're doing. I think you're doing incredible, incredible work, and having, you know, experienced your level of intuition is just remarkable. And I know that you have a lot of the practical skills with your herbalism and just plant medicine in general, but it really is your intuition and your deep listening that I think sets you apart from someone who just knows Band-Aid medicine with herbs.
Oh, well, thank you so much for saying that. I feel really honored, so thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And Shanahan Ridge, for those of you out here, wonderful, wonderful spot.
It's gorgeous.
Beautiful time out here. Sitting on your quilt, drinking tea, feeling the breeze, watching the sun pass, and listening to that annoying helicopter.
Yeah, and the thunder. There was a little rumble of thunder.
A little thunder in the background.
The grass. I love the tall grass. Well, yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh my gosh, wow. Well, that was such a treat to chat with David. And thank you so much for listening. And yeah, if you want to connect with the podcast or send me a message, you can just hop on Instagram. That's the best way to connect. And that's at Time in the Studio. Or visit me on my personal site, Sarah Marie Studio. Or you can check out my business page, Ada Zia Arts, or connect with me on my website. So yeah, I look forward to all the upcoming episodes. So I'm going to try to keep doing this every Sunday. If you want to leave a donation and help make this more manageable, please feel free to do that. You can check that out at https://timeinthestudio.simplecast.fm. That's, again, timeinthestudio.simplecast.fm. And you can leave a donation there for any amount, as little as a dollar. Just click on the dollar sign. Thank you so much. And I really appreciate you being here. And please feel free to reach out if you want to share any of your experiences with the plants. Or, I just love hearing from people. It's really fun. So love and light to you all, and may our efforts benefit all beings. Thank you so much. Cheers.